empathy is the word that I really love. There's one thing that I can give a lot of credit to is empathy. So a lot of people talk about empathy, right? But to really practice empathy is very, very difficult.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Hassan Ibn Akram. Here's three facts that I believe you should know about Hassan. One, he is a serial entrepreneur. Two, he is a computer scientist working in the domain of autonomous vehicle safety and security. And three, he is a passionate about high performance. And I believe in mentioning the last one, I should also add, he is the author of the book, The Million Dollar Monk, which talks about high performance. Hassan, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you, George. Thank you so much for the kind introduction. Glad to be here.
Delighted to be talking with you across the ocean today. And you have a scientist brain and an entrepreneur's drive and passion. And in order to make that work and be successful, one of the areas you also need to address is your communication skills. And my guess is you've learned along the way how to communicate, because science and entrepreneurship, and a lot of scientists are not good communicators, and that's one of the downfalls. And so when we get a scientist who's a good communicator and an entrepreneur, aha, we've got something magic. What were the initial lessons that you struggled with when it comes to communication?
Great question, George. So in our technology domain, there is this term we call T-shaped engineer. A T-shaped engineer is someone who can take a deep dive in technology. Who can even read codes or write codes when we're talking about software development. At the same time, can also communicate at a very high level. It is very rare, as you mentioned, scientists, engineers, they live in the very, very detailed domain of what they do. So what often happens is when they're talking at a management level, they're going too much into details, and that's not T-shaped. T-shaped should be able to navigate, go really deep, and also able to navigate horizontally and talk in a very high level. And that's the difficulty I faced myself, and I've seen my colleagues when I was a PhD student. My colleagues were talking about ideas that they were so much passionate about. But within 3 days, before even testing if this is going to resonate with the market or not, they had a prototype. The reason is, I could call Big Bang Theory here, because we can.
Because we can. And however, that's not enough of a reason, because management saying, so what?
Absolutely. So if I go and talk to an investor, for example, and use some of the terms that we use on a daily basis at work, I've lost the VC, the investor. I have to do storytelling. Storytelling is one of the most important skills I've learned in terms of communication, because storytelling is what connects people, and people like hearing stories. So storytelling, if you want to explain a very difficult topic, which is not very difficult for us, we deal with it on a daily basis. For example, I'll give you an example. We deal with a technology called AUTOSAR, which is essentially a architecture for vehicle computers, which are called ECUs, to have an operating system. The analogy is, when I say it's kind of like the Android or, Android OS or the iOS for cars, that's it, they get it. But if I talk in terms of the jargon that we use, it's very difficult. So coming back to your question, a scientist and or an engineer, they love what they do. They live in their domain. It's very difficult for them to come out of that domain more often than you think. And that's why we have so less of T-shaped engineers. And like you said, the combination of entrepreneurial drive and engineering, that's very rare in our domain.
And I think in modern times, I think of as a communicator, Steve Jobs, when he launched his products. And I remember the line, the big line that sticks in my memory is when he introduced the iPod with the line, "I have 1,000 songs in my pocket." And he didn't talk about the technology or the engineering or the how many bits or megabits it was. He just had 1,000 songs. Now that people go, oh, 1,000 songs. Imagine if I could carry around 1,000 songs. So that's going to appeal to people. And I'm guessing that's what you've learned to do with your stories.
Absolutely. It's a storytelling. You're telling that I have something in my pocket. So everybody can relate to it. Another amazing person that I really try to learn from him, who is an amazing communicator and a scientist, is Neil deGrasse Tyson. Neil deGrasse Tyson takes those concepts of physics, astrophysics, that only a handful of scientists will be able to read in their journals, and he sells it to everybody. That is an amazing way of communicating. The recent book that I'm almost done with, I'm about to publish, is called A Brief History of Autonomous Vehicle, because that's the domain I work in. And I really tried to follow Neil deGrasse Tyson, because the book is for everyone. And that's why communicating at that level, so that everybody understands, is really the name of the game. Because there was one joke, somebody said that, you know, we have such a good professor coming in that he's so good that nobody understands. But that's not a good professor. A good professor is a professor where even the guest student will understand everything.
Terrific reminder. Interesting analogy. Yes, he's so good that no one will understand him. And that's not something that anyone wants to have said about themselves. And so, Hassan, what process did you go through? Was it a big mistake that happened in your life, or was it just you looked around and you noticed what was working and you started, well, maybe I could do that? What was your journey?
It's a very good question. In terms of communication, the journey started with, I think I like twofold kind of like revolution in the entire journey. So as an engineer, you have to be very, very precise. Precision is really the name of the game. So I had a PhD advisor from University of Nantes, Colin de la Iguara, and his idea was, I mean, even if when you were writing, it should be like, you know, you're writing mathematics that nobody can misunderstand. And this is where I had to, you know, write description of mathematical equation under his supervision. And I learned how to communicate in a precise manner. But again, that was really, really, really technical. But that, I think, gave me the first, like, the foundation of preciseness. You know, if you're an engineer, you have to be very, very precise, whatever you're communicating. There should be no vagueness. And then the rest was, you know, communicating to people, communicating to investors. That came with practice. Obviously, I was not as good a communicator in the beginning. I went probably to a management meeting, and I was going too detailed. Okay, this is where the management stumbled. This is where I lost the management. And I kind of learned by practice.
And when you are attempting to communicate precise details, because you've got the mind of an engineer, the mind of a scientist, where you're very detail-oriented, and you're communicating to management, whether it's investors or executives, do you have an internal conflict of, well, if I leave something out, I wasn't honest? Do you have that feeling of guilt, what if I leave something out and I didn't tell them everything? Does that mean I'm a liar?
Well, it's not that, actually. I mean, it's a tendency of engineers to add details. You know, this is how great my stuff, what else can I do? But what you have to deploy here is more empathy. You know, you have to put yourself in the management position, in the investor's position. And me being the CEO of a company that I run, I have to also train my people, look, I mean, don't give me the details. I only need three numbers because there are like 2,000 things on my table. If I go to the details, there's no way I'll be able to be alive anymore. So give me the map, kind of like executive summary. I had to tell my assistant, I need an executive summary. I need the KPIs. So this is where, when I know that the investor or the management or whoever I'm going, I'll have to kind of dial my communication level up or down based on that and empathize with that person. And another thing that is super powerful is analogy. Analogies are really good way to connect. And the analogy that I gave, you know, Android OS and iOS, there's a nice analogy to, you know, connect to those people. So fortunately for me, it's like I can talk to my developers where I can go to the code level and, you know, understand him. I empathize with him. Obviously, I'm not talking about too high level of a thing with him because this is too obvious to me. And I'm talking in details with him and trying to rephrase what he just said and trying to say that if we're syncing or not, and asking the right question also when you're talking to the engineers. This is really, really important when you're communicating at a technical level and especially with a technical nerd. If you ask him a vague question, he's not going to give you the precise answer. You have to really, really, it's all about asking the right question. You have to engineer your question in a way so that he knows exactly what you have to speak his language. You have to pinpoint him. If you see that, okay, the question was a little bit too vague, taking the wrong direction, you have to rephrase the question and you will get to the point where you're trying to get to, and you will get that answer.
That's insightful. If you want better answers, ask better questions, keeping in mind the mindset of the person you're asking that of.
Right.
And so depending on the information you want from this person and their perspective, you need to adapt your question so that you get the answer you want.
Absolutely. And George, empathy is the word that I really love. There's one thing that I can give a lot of credit to is empathy. So a lot of people talk about empathy, right? But to really practice empathy is very, very difficult. Let me tell you a story that I experienced when I was in Harvard. I was in a executive training in Harvard. And there was a session about, it's a leadership training, there's a session about empathy. And there was an exercise about a role play. So what was, in my group, there was this lady who was a vice president of a major U.S. pharmaceutical company, and we were doing the role play. The role play is like this. She will be playing me, and I will be playing someone who I had a recent conflict with, and the vice versa. I will be playing her, and she'll be playing someone that she had recent conflict with. This is where I have to empathize with someone that I had a recent conflict with. I never had imagined how difficult the task was. And this is where I learned empathy is not about just sympathizing. Sympathizing is easy. We often confuse those two. But even when you have a conflict with someone, you are able to put yourself in that person's position. From that person's point of view, you're the evil, right? And that's so difficult. And afterwards, I wanted to talk about a little bit about Chris Voss. I came across Chris Voss's book. I also took coaching from his team, from Derek. And he talks about tactical empathy. How do you empathize with a terrorist? I mean, you do not have any, there's no way you can ideologically agree with him. So empathizing does not really mean that you have to agree with him. You know, when I was having that training, it was difficult because I did not understand the concept of tactical empathy. But when you understand tactical empathy, it's to understand his emotion, but not to agree with it, then it's fine. Then you can empathize at a tactical level.
That sounds difficult.
That is difficult, George. George, how do you, you know, teach empathy? How do you use the empathetic aspect in your communication coaching?
And I'm glad you asked that, because one of the critical first steps that I do teach people is about understanding the mindset of your listener, the person you're trying to communicate. And it's not whether they're right or wrong. This is who they are, and this is their position. How do you reach them with your message? And which means that you need to understand where they're coming from. And their initial reaction might be, you're a jerk, I'm not going to listen to you. Well, how do you get past that? Well, you have to. You might start with something. I know we disagree, and you probably think that I'm a jerk. And you wouldn't be the first person to call me that. And then you need to approach from their point of view so that they get your message. So you're right. When it comes to empathy, it's not about right or wrong. It's simply understanding and saying, how can I demonstrate that I understand them? And then they might listen to what I have to say.
Wow, that's really mind-blowing. The person who is saying, yeah, but this guy's a jerk, why should I listen to him? It's so difficult to see yourself as a jerk. You know, it's like, you, even if you're empathizing, when you're saying, okay, how can I, you skip the empathy part. Often we do, what we do is skip the empathy. How can I kind of like change him not to think that I'm a jerk? But first step is you have to understand his emotion behind he thinking that you are a jerk. And reading that emotion, I had a recent conversation with someone who says that, you know, don't even listen to the word, try to read the emotion. What do you think of that, George?
And that resonates well too. And I'm thinking of a previous guest that I've had on the podcast. Perhaps you know of him, Doug Knoll. His book is How to Calm an Angry Person in 90 Seconds or Less. And that's his advice. Don't listen
exactly
to
Doug Knoll. It was Doug Knoll I'm talking about. Wow. Small. I had a recent conversation with Doug Knoll, and I'm reading his book now. Wow. I'm going to tell him that we had this conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was amazed by him because I thought about the situations where I've been in where I did get angry. And the reason was because I was reacting to the words, not understanding the person's emotional space.
Sure.
What a difference. And that's so counterintuitive to, and it's counter to what we've learned and normally practice. Well, you can't say that to me. Oh, you can't call me a jerk. Well, you're a jerk too. And you get all caught up in words. But yet it's the emotion that's controlling the exchange. And we tend to ignore the emotions.
True. It's hard. Empathizing with the emotion is hard. You know, it's almost kind of accepting the fact that you're a jerk. But if you read Chris Voss, you don't have to accept it. This is really what helped me. I don't have to agree with his words that I'm a jerk, but I still want to understand why he feels that I'm a jerk. What's the emotion behind it? And Doug Knoll is amazing. I'm reading his book right now. The conversation with him was amazing. I'm also having another set of conversation with him about his company. But his book is like, that really helped me if I really try to read the emotion. So what are the kind of clientele you usually teach, you coach?
Typically, Hassan, I work with executives, with senior executives. And a couple reasons for that. One, I'm comfortable talking with senior executives. There was a time where, I can't talk to him. He's the big boss. Well, I got over that a long time ago, but, you know, I faced it in the beginning. So I treat everyone as an equal, and I expect them to treat me as an equal. And the good thing about senior executives is they appreciate direct honesty. And that's what I offer. I don't criticize. I offer direct honesty. And here's what's working. Here's what people might be thinking. And so that appeals to them. Not everyone in the organization appeals to them. When I've worked with junior people or first line supervisors, they're still afraid of the whole hierarchy thing. Oh, I can't talk to them. They're the big boss. Well, you know what? If you talk to them like this, the way they want you to talk to them, they'll give you more respect.
You know, this is actually a problem or a challenge that a lot of people faces, including me. So me being the CEO of the company, what I hear is when I talk to people, they're like, you know, having that fear. Like, I'm talking to the big boss. Probably I shouldn't open up. Or, you know, they have their guard on. any advice to, you know, take that guard down? How do I communicate with people of all level in my company without they having that guard with me?
And it's not easy to do, Hassan, and it's good that you notice. You know, the old joke is that when you become the CEO of the company, that's the last time you'll hear the truth from anyone.
That means I've never heard the truth, because I founded the company, so I've never heard the truth. Yeah. So what are the tactics there are to get around with it, or at least easing up a little bit?
Be human. Be vulnerable. Be willing to realize that people will never totally let their guard down. Probably never totally. Because remember, when you're the CEO, when you're building the company, your biggest fear is, can you make payroll? Well, the company's growing. You're responsible for people. And you know what the fear of every employee is? Will I still have a job at the end of the day? And so every time they make a decision, that's the fear in their head. That's a different fear in your head, depending when you're the head of the company. So they always have that fear. But if you can appear more human and admit a flaw, admit a learning, and it's not that you come out and reveal all your flaws, but just admit a flaw, a weak point, a learning point, something that you struggled with, and demonstrate how you're like them. It could be as simple as, here's how you demonstrate you're like other people. Talk about the things we have in common, and guess what we have in common? We all have family in common, and we all have self-doubt and fears and embarrassment in common. Share one of those stories.
Yeah, it's a very powerful advice, because your vulnerability, I believe, is your asset. If you can play your cards right. There was a time that even US politicians was trying to come up with who had more difficult childhood. And Bill Clinton was talking about all the bullying he experienced. So US politicians use that all the time. I think what I really want to add to that is, when you are putting a vulnerability down, vulnerability out on the table, you have to be authentic. You know, authenticity is really the really, really, really the key in every aspect of life. I think, you know, if your sexiest version is your true self, there is your authentic self. If you're not authentic, if you try to be someone else, no matter how cool that is, that's not going to be the most attractive version. And there's nothing more attractive than confidence, you know, authenticity. So that's another thing. When you're using vulnerability, I would suggest, I would recommend the viewers use that responsibly. It's very powerful, but be authentic. It's going to get you somewhere.
And Hassan, I'll tell you what resonated with me when I was reading your book, The Million Dollar Monk. The beginning of chapter one, you started out where you were a student in Germany at the time. And one of your friends said that his sister wants to meet you. And you thought, oh, okay, that's neat. Why does she want to meet me? Well, because she's never met a brown person before. And so you brought that up right up front, and you put it in a curious, amusing way, and pointed out that you had now this thing called brown privilege.
That's brown privilege, yeah. Which everybody has got a privilege. I mean, everybody has got a privilege. And this is like, whatever you have is your privilege. You know, the fact that you are there is a privilege, right? You just have to know how to play your privilege right. I mean, play your cards right.
Mm-hmm. And Hassan, see, that was one of the examples of you being vulnerable and being totally comfortable with what was a different perspective than what might have occurred to a non-brown person.
Right. Absolutely. There's absolutely nothing racist about it. A lot of people would say, hey, this is racist, and I don't see that. This is curiosity. And curiosity is not racist.
Yep. And curiosity is wanting to learn more about people who are different in some way.
Right. Right. That's absolutely innocent and amazing.
Mm. And Hassan, let's apply the curiosity principle to communicating with people who think differently. How have you made that work for you?
That's a great question, first of all, George. People who think differently or look differently, they will probably say things that will not match with your way of thinking. The way I see it is, whenever I go to a business meeting, I try to like that. I actually learned that from, from a very famous sales guy. I can't recall his name. I mean, he wrote a lot of books about Zig Ziglar.
Zig Ziglar.
I learned it from Zig Ziglar's book. So what he used to do, he wrote down several things, at least 3 points that he likes about that person. And this is exactly what I try to do. I try to write down, sometimes I just think in my head, writing is obviously better, I recommend writing. What do I like about this person? And fully focus on liking. And it has to be authentic. Again, the word authentic is so important here. It has to come from within you. You genuinely will have to like those things about that person. And Zig Ziglar had an amazing story that he was asking a lady, when a lady comes, hey, I mean, everybody in my workplace is horrible. Like he was complaining so much about this workplace. And Zig Ziglar said, hey, there's no way I can help you. And in fact, what I'm going to tell you, they're going to fire you. And this lady was furious. They said, there's only one way I can help you if you listen to me. Well, I'm going to listen to you. Then this lady is asking, okay, what to do? So you're saying there's nothing you like about your job? No, there's absolutely nothing I like about this job. Do they pay you? Yes. So do you like to get paid? Yes. So there's one thing you like, you like the paycheck. So it turns out they don't only pay her, they pay her well. So write it down. And there were several things that came out that lady liked about that job. And Zig Ziglar said, go home and replace those like with love and say these sentences out loud in front of the mirror. Do this every day. This lady came back 6 months later in another conference or seminar Zig Ziglar was in. You're not going to believe it. Everybody at work changed. Believe it or not, no, people don't change. It's your perspective, only your perspective. If you start liking people, somehow connection happens if you like them genuinely.
So those people who are strange, who maybe annoy you, or just you just don't understand, find something to like about them. And what do you know? They'll suddenly be more likable.
They'll suddenly be more likable if it is genuine. If it is flattery, it's going to backfire.
And I'm reminded of the concept when we attend a conference or a networking session, we often tend to hang out with people we already know or people who are like us. And yet the reality is we'll gain the most by meeting people who are totally different, who are strangers.
Yeah.
Hassan, before we wrap up soon, if people want to find out more, you have a program called BrainVincible. What's that all about and how can that help people?
So BrainVincible is a company that I co-founded with two of my sisters. One of my sisters is a medical doctor. She is soon to finish her neurology training. So together with her, I developed a brain training program that kind of, involves, it's a little bit personal too. In 2014, when I was driving 3 times a week to Audi as I work in the automotive industry, which is like about 50 minutes drive from where I live, when I came back, I had no energy. I was like, I was in my early 30s and I had no energy. So I was thinking, what is wrong with me? And I came across Dave Asprey's book where I first got introduced with the term biohacking. And Dave Asprey talked about a special kind of brain training, which I actually was familiar with without technology. You know, you try to enhance the alpha brainwave to get to a meditative state. When I got introduced to it, when I was actually 16, I had read a book from Jose Silva. And that book changed my life, but I didn't practice that anymore, But when I revisited the thing with Dave Asprey, when he brings in technology, I was extremely curious. So I went to such a training and did this, and I really realized what alpha was. When I was trying to, enhance my alpha, it didn't work. It just didn't work. But the moment I let everything go, let me tell you the setting a little bit. So if you do meditation, you often don't understand what's happening, right? You know, even to increase alpha. But if you put some electrode on your head and have some feedback that where your alpha aptitude are, then you know what's happening, right? So now I'm having some feedback with this technological, you know, in the lab. I have some electrode on my head. So I'm trying, nothing has happened. The moment I let it go, the alpha goes up. I said, wow, this is strange. And I kind of like, okay, so I shouldn't try. I should relax. I should just let things go. So I'm trying. So the alpha is really, really doing well. The moment I even think about, wow, I'm doing good, alpha goes down. So enhancing alpha or the meditative state, as Deepak Chopra says, is about nothing. Now, it's really hard for a lot of people to meditate because how can you teach them the concept of nothing? I did not understand before I, you know, used technology. And coming back to your question, this is exactly what we do in BrainVincible. We train you with technology. If you come to our lab, you'll have some electrodes on your head. You'll be sitting in a nice chair on having this, you know, wonderful thing. During COVID, since there was no one traveling, we also designed an online version of it, which anybody can access. I mean, if you want, I can give you the URL where they can find this.
Mm. And we'll include that website, that link in the description below as well. And that's at brainvincible.com.
That's at brainvincible.com, yes.
And invincible is just like the word invincible without the in.
Yes.
Good. And you know, it's strange as you're describing the process that you take people through, Hassan. I'm thinking, I can just see your sales message. We'll help you think about nothing.
We'll help you think about nothing. Yes, that's a good one. That's a good one. Love it.
You can't try to think about nothing, but we'll help you think nothing. I can see a lot of people scratching their head and going, huh? How do I get there? Hassan, just before we wrap up, if you could sit down with a business leader and give them one, two, or three pieces of advice of how they can communicate more effectively across the organization and up and down within the organization, if that one, two, or three pieces of advice, what would that be?
Great question. First, I would say empathize. Empathy. Empathy is really the key. Once you're able to empathize, the second part is you try to, you know, precision is really, I mean, if you're a leader, you have to also be precise. You know, you have to be precise. And here is one very interesting thing, that the difference between a leader and a manager. Your job is not to give a task of a leader. You know, I mean, we often confuse that if we give assigned task. A leader's job is to give a mission. And how can you articulate that mission and the vision with your team and somehow align that mission and vision with their life mission and vision using empathy? That's the formula.
A curious challenge for all leaders out there, and definitely something worth working on. My guest today is Hassan Ibn Akram, reminding you to, especially if you're a technical expert, to think about the T-shape way of communicating your message.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.